This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I am so thrilled to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my favorite writers, Jessica Strasser. Hi, Jessica, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. That's so nice of you, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I have to remind my listeners, although I talk about you quite often in relationship to pina coladas, that Jessica is the editor-at-large at Writer's Digest magazine, where she has served as editorial director for nearly a decade. And she's also well-known for her wonderful interviews and for her your wonderful articles. So I remember last year I was so thrilled when you sent out an email or a little blurb. You said, oh, I received wonderful news this morning. I will be a published author this year. And I remember reading that and I thought, wow, oh, that's so exciting, because you have worked around writers, with writers, and about writers for so many years that it was exciting that finally you had your first book.
Yeah, I sort of switched sides of the desk
Exactly. Well, yeah. That book is called Almost Missed You. And as you know, I fell in love with that book because it started off with a pina colada, and I just continued reading the book with a number of pina coladas. And so every time I order a pina colada now, I think of Almost Missed You, and that was...
And I think of you every time I order one.
Well, it's so funny. So I was really excited with the new book. It's called Not That I Could Tell, but I can tell everybody, this is a wonderful book. This is really great. On Thursday, I'm going to be interviewing Mary Higgins Clark. So I have been going back and rereading some of her books. And I want to tell you that there are elements in your book that just remind me of her and how she is able, just as you did in this book, to create characters that we really care about.
Oh, that's so nice of you. I was a huge Mary Higgins Clark fan from a very young age. I actually met her as a teenager one time. I remember I grew up in Pittsburgh, and she came to Pittsburgh, and there was a ticketed event at a DoubleTree Hotel, and you could buy a dinner ticket and have dinner with her and get a book signed. And I asked my mom if she would take me, and my mom said, sure. So my mom and I got tickets to go to this hotel and have a dinner, and Mary Higgins Clark was elegant as ever and wished me luck. You know, I kind of went up and told her I wanted to be a writer, and I very vividly remember how warm and encouraging she was. And so, yeah, that's pretty, that's a huge compliment, so thank you.
Well, I think that, you know, suspense is not easy, because you really have to have this slow reveal in order to make it interesting, in order to keep turning the pages. You need, one, you have to be invested in the characters. And that's, I think, that one of the beautiful things about Mary Higgins Clark, you can pick up her books and almost immediately you feel as if you are with those characters. And that's the same thing that happened here. I thought that right from the beginning, there are several characters that I particularly related well to, but in Not That I Could Tell, you just, one after another, the characters are, what I like is when I really know that the characters are separate, and so they stay in your mind. So I'll let you tell what you want to tell about the premise of the book. I don't like to reveal too much myself, because I think people should just go into a book. Sometimes, they spoil it with too much information. But you tell what you want, and then we'll talk about how you managed to write this fantastic book.
Okay. Well, there are no pina coladas, but there is wine. So the book is about, it's sort of an ensemble cast. It's a group of neighborhood women in this small town, and the story opens when they've gathered in where their backyards meet. One woman has a brand new fire pit on a patio that her husband has built, and they realize that all of their baby monitors can reach that far. So they have sort of a girls' night in the backyard on a Saturday night, and by Monday morning, one of them has turned up missing, and it turns out that these women were ostensibly the last people to have seen her. Problem being that they got way too carried away with the wine that night, and their memories are very foggy, so they're not very good witnesses, if you want to call them witnesses. So yeah, I think, it's an interesting perspective. Most of the story is the perspective of two of those neighbor women. One is a stay-at-home mom, and one is a single woman who has recently moved to town and bought a fixer-upper, kind of trying to escape a bad situation in her love life in this nearby town that she's from. So they are very different characters. And in the ensemble cast, we have, kind of a spry, precocious 12-year-old. There's a lesbian couple with a new baby that owns a boutique. There's a military wife who's getting her degree at the college in town while her husband is deployed. So I like that it's this group of friends and neighbors who, they know each other, they think they know each other well enough, and they certainly respect one another and look out for one another, but at the same time, they're all very different women, and none of them know the others as well as they perhaps suppose that they do at the opening of the story.
Well, I particularly liked Izzy. She's the producer of a radio show, so I sort of related to Izzy, and I love her story. I thought you made her so realistic, and that we really wanted to know her, and we really started to care about her, and that's so important in a suspense story, because you have to really care about them, worry about them, and worry about what's going to happen. And so you just did a terrific job.
Well, it's a compliment that you like the radio producer character, so hopefully that means I did a good job. But yes, Izzy, so she's the single woman who I mentioned earlier, and yet she basically has this job on a radio show that she doesn't really like. She's sort of like a NPR-minded person in a really, really cheesy morning show kind of world, but all of her neighbors love the show. So everyone's constantly, coming up to her and trying to talk about what was on that morning, and she's kind of like, ah, you guys like that? Like, she's good at her job. She's good at what she does, but, it involves, there's a really popular segment that involves dating, and she's just so jaded about her own love life, and she's very conscientious, citizen of the world, and she sees it as her job to go through all these headlines of real news and pick out, the frivolous things.
Now, one of the things, one of the great things about this book, you have, there's a richness. It doesn't matter if it was, for example, how to spell the word principal, or just little things in there that I kept saying to myself, have you been keeping notes all for years just so that you can use all these little tidbits?
No, I probably should keep better notes.
So you just sit down. Did you outline the book, or are you the kind who just sits down and it flows?
I don't, usually I don't outline, but it was interesting with Not. I find that every book is a little bit different, and with Not That I Could Tell, I did know the end. I knew where I was going, but not how I was going to get there. So, which with Almost Miss You was not the case at all. I really had no idea where that story was going when I began. So this time I knew I had the experience of writing towards something, which I quite liked. So it was kind of a different experience of trying to get from point A to point B in an interesting way with these characters, kind of letting these characters drive the story.
And I like the character Haley.
Yes. She's that precocious 12-year-old that I mentioned. I think she really sort of she's rattled by the fact that this woman has gone missing, and I think she's viewing this all in a very innocent, wide-eyed kind of way, and I think she's a really interesting counterpart to the adult point of views in the story that tend to be a little bit more, you know, cynical or jaded by contrast to Hallie.
Now, Yellow Springs is a real place where this story is set.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, how did you select Yellow Springs?
Well, Yellow Springs is kind of an eclectic, beautiful small town here in Ohio. It's a little over an hour from Cincinnati, where I live. And I really wanted for the story, I decided that it needed to be a small town. I mean, with this woman who's gone missing, you know, at first it seems as if she's packed up all her things and left of her own volition, but then, you know, some unsettling details about the state of her divorce start coming out and things like that, and people start to have this uneasy feeling about what might have actually happened to her. And I needed there to be, for this story, I really wanted there to be a ripple effect where that sense of unease would kind of start to permeate her inner circle and then even her outer circle through the whole town. So it really needed to be, a small town where, you know, not too much bad stuff happens, and it wouldn't get lost in a sea of bad headlines, and more people would actually care. And so I knew I needed to choose a small town, and Yellow Springs is just one of my favorites. My husband and I have spent many long weekends there, camping, taking our bikes up there. There's a beautiful state park. There's a beautiful nature preserve. There are actual springs. They're not exactly yellow. They're sort of like a orangish color because of the minerals in the soil. But people used to believe that the springs had healing properties. Some people still believe that the springs have healing properties. And so some really early in the town's history, some really interesting cooperative communities had sprung up there. And there were health spas, and there's a lot of alternative medicine and things like that. So it's a really interesting little place that was a really fun place to live in my head for a year. And then I think there were neat little synergies that sort of presented themselves once I did start digging a little bit more into the setting and the history of the setting, like the fact that people used to come there for new beginnings and for healing, and that's what Izzy is there looking for. You know, she's come there trying to look for a fresh start and to kind of heal these things from her past that she's trying to get over. So there were little things like that, you know, it started just as, well, I need a small town, and, oh, I love that small town. That would be fun. And then by the end of the story, I felt like the town itself had sort of become a character in the story, and, I can no longer imagine it taking place anywhere else.
You're right. It does become a character and a fascinating one. And I have a feeling a lot of people are going to want to go there now because of this book. So they'll probably have to declare a Jessica Strasser Day once a year, right?
Either that or they'll curse me because of the influx of people, one or the other. But, but hopefully it'll be a good thing.
I think it's
a wonderful place to visit.
Well, they gave CJ Box a day, and so I think you need a day too. So, you know,
there is a town in Italy that has a David Baldacci day.
Yeah, so
where his family is from. So there you go.
There you go. Exactly. Now, of course, one of the things very special about you is that you have a wonderful agent who has been on the program many times.
Barbara Powell.
And, of course, I know that she's brilliant. And, of course, one of the things is she discovered you. So let's talk a little bit about Barbara, because maybe we'll make her blush, because she is really so wonderful. And my listeners love her. And I have played her recommendations about query letters and over and over, actually, on the program. I think I played them a dozen times because my listeners really enjoyed the interviews that I've had with her. So let's talk about Barbara for a moment.
Oh, and she writes a wonderful advice column for Writer's Digest, which was something I had worked with her on at the magazine before she was my agent. And it's called Funny You Should Ask, and she answers questions from writers about pretty much anything. You can write in any kind of question to the Writer's Digest email, and she'll answer it. But she answers with good humor. You know, it's not just this dry, so much of publishing advice is kind of this dry Q&A, and she answers everything with really good candor and good humor and just brings her personality to it. And I think that that's why people love her. And I think people think of her as, you know, oh, that's the funny agent. That's the personable agent. That's the agent who I'd like to go out for drinks with. But at the end of the day, what you realize when you're one of her clients is she is a good agent. I mean, do not be fooled. She knows her stuff, and she's a force to be reckoned with.
And of course, she's with the Irene Goodman Agency, and Irene Goodman was my very first guest on Joy on Paper.
Oh, I think you told me that last time.
Yeah, and I just celebrated the third anniversary of Joy on Paper, and so I've been thinking a lot about Irene and Barbara because they are both fantastic, and over the 3 years, they've come back to the show many times, and I really appreciate all that they do in encouraging writers to to get out there and really try and to make an effort to have their books published.
They're very, very generous with the writing community and, you know, and with their own clients as well. They send out, I think it's a monthly email newsletter that comes out where they'll kind of share, you know, it's not, once you're one of their clients, it's not like you only talk to your agent when you have, you know, a question or have something to say. They'll send out these monthly updates about what's going on in the agency and relevant meetings that they've had with certain editors lately and what their other clients are up to. And I think that not only are they so well respected in the writing community, but once you're on their client list as well, that feeling doesn't go away. I mean, they really are very generous with their knowledge and with their time. And
they want to help authors build a long career, not just a one-off. So you weren't a one-off wonder. Now, was this book easier? You wrote it in a year, and what did Barbara say when she got it?
Well, Barbara, when she sold Almost Missed You, she sold it in a two-book deal, and so this was the second book of that initial two-book deal. I've since signed a third contract with St. Martin's Press for another novel that will be out next year. So really, literally, my contract for this novel said Untitled Number 2. It was just like, the next thing you write, and hopefully it's good enough for us to publish. So, you know, no pressure at all. But Barbara told me when she started shopping Almost Missed You, she said, what are you working on now? I want to sell this in a two-book deal. And at the time, I wasn't working on anything. I was at kind of a frustrating place where I just left my previous agent, and I had another novel that had been shopped that I had never sold. And I said, well, I'm not really working on anything. You know, I'm working on a bottle of gin on my deck. I'm not really working on a story right now. And she said, well, you better get busy because I'm going to sell this in a two-book deal. And I kind of thought, yeah, okay, sure. But I did get busy right away, and she sold it within 2 weeks. So she wasn't kidding. But by that point, I already had the seed of the story, and I sent her an initial concept and some chapters, and she said, that's great, keep going. And we sent it to my editor at St. Martin's, and she said, that's great, keep going. And so, you know, I did write it. It was the first thing that I wrote under contract. It was the first thing that I wrote with that kind of the weight of those expectations on it. But fortunately, it came together, and I'm working on my third novel now for next year.
Wow. Now, see, for all those years you were involved in the writing business, watching other authors come out with their books. And so it must feel pretty exciting that now you're going to be a one-a-year book author.
I don't know if it, for perpetuity I will be, but hopefully for as long as I can sustain it. It is, I mean, it's, gosh, it's so exciting. And, you know, I think, you interview a lot of writers, and I think that, you know, one of my favorite parts of my job at Writer's Digest was the interviews that I would do for our cover stories with, you know, really career, most of those interviews were not with one-hit wonders. They were with authors who were really career-long successes, who had published, you know, 20, 25 novels, been doing this for a long time. And that was one of my favorite parts of the job. And I think we put, as aspiring writers especially, we kind of put those people up on this pedestal. They do deserve to be up there. But what I think stands out to you when you start doing those interviews and speaking with them is that they're just regular people. I mean, after a while, after you talk to a lot of them, it does sort of start to seem like, well, you could try this. You could do this. And by and large, most of them are so warm and encouraging and remember very well what it was like to be collecting rejection for their work. And it's amazing how many of them have stories of having been really on the verge of giving up when they got their first break. And so I think it is motivating and inspiring to get to speak to so many of those writers. And they sort of make it sound doable. And so when I first started trying my hand at fiction writing, which was something I'd loved my entire life, but I had gone into this path of journalism and editing and nonfiction writing. When I first started fiction writing, I was absolutely doing it in the closet. I mean, nobody knew that I was really doing it. And I worked for a long time before I ever showed anything to anyone, much less even really mentioned that I was trying it myself. But all those people did absolutely give me the confidence to give it a try.
Well, in secret there, you really honed your talent because you've become a really delightful writer. Your sentences, your paragraphs, they just flow so nicely. As I was reading this, I kept thinking to myself, whoa, she's such a fine writer. I can't believe it's, with the first book, I kept saying, I can't believe this is her first book. And now I'm saying, I can't believe it's her second book because it is so very good.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's just.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And as I said, because of the richness of your ability to capture characters, and I love your dialogue. What do you like writing best, the dialogue or the description? Where do you sort of flow the best, do you feel?
I get good feedback on my dialogue. I think dialogue is a really good way to speed a scene along and to pick up the pace a little bit. And so I do enjoy those scenes. Sometimes I have to make myself write them. I think I tend to get... Because I don't outline, I think a lot of times in the first draft when I'm writing, I'm like telling myself the story, trying to figure out what's going on. So there's a lot of like over-explaining a character's thoughts and things like that that I have to go back and correct later. And occasionally I'll be midway through one of those scenes where I'm trying to figure out for myself what's happening, and I'll realize, wait a second, this could be conveyed in a conversation with someone else, which would be much more interesting and much faster paced. And I do enjoy kind of just trying to pare that down to, you know, good dialogue in fiction is really just the highlights of what we say in real life, you know. So I really enjoy trying to, if I can convey something in a scene of dialogue instead of an internal monologue or description, I think it does a lot.
Well, it certainly does in your writing. Now, I have to take a little break. We're going to take a break. I'm going to play a little book buzz, which we did for you. And then we're going to have a few commercials. And we're going to come back. I want to talk to you more about writing. And I'd like to also talk about the 4th Annual Mystery and Thriller Virtual Conference, about which Writer's Digest is doing. Okay? So
Sounds great. Hold on.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. And An Innocent Night of Fun takes a shocking turn in Not That I Could Tell, the next page turner from Jessica Strasser. Here's the buzz. When a group of neighborhood women gather, wine in hand, around a fire pit where their backyards meet one Saturday night, most of them are just ecstatic to have discovered that their baby momager's reached that far. It's a rare kid-free night, and they're giddy with it. They drink too much, and the conversation turns personal, and by Monday morning, one of them is gone. Everyone knows something about everyone else in the quirky small Ohio town of Yellow Springs, but no one can make sense of the disappearance. As the police investigation goes from a media circus to a cold case, the neighbors are forced to re-examine what's going on behind their own closed doors and to ask how well anyone really knows anyone else. In Not That I Could Tell by Jessica Strasser, the author tackles the secrets of suburbia, domestic abuse, and friendship in a gripping story about a neighboring family gone missing. Due out March 27th, readers will find the characters unique, engaging, and relatable, and the ending both surprising and poignant. Hey, this is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's Radio-Joy on Paper. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper, buzzing off for now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with Jessica Strasser, whose newest book, Not That I Could Tell, just came out, and it is fantastic. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit more about your writing, and then we're going to talk about the 4th Annual Mystery and Thriller Virtual Conference, because it's one of the, I think, one of the premier events at Writer's Digest. So, but let's get back just for a minute. I want to talk about your writing because, as you said, you sit down and you write, and you wrote this first draft. How long did that take you?
The first draft? Oh, gosh.
How many words do you write a day? Do you set a limit?
I have a minimum of 1,000 words a day. So what was interesting about Not That I Could Tell is, at the time, I was still working. Now I'm editor at large at Writer's Digest, so I'm contributing from the outside. I'm not at the editor's desk anymore. But when I wrote Not That I Could Tell, I was still the editor-in-chief of Writer's Digest magazine, and I was the editorial director of the brand, and I had Almost Missed You in production. So what would happen would be that I would be ticking along on my draft for Not That I Could Tell, you know, at least 1,000 words a day, really cranking on it, and then I would get back, you know, from my editor at St. Martin's, okay, here's your revision letter on Almost Missed You. This revision is due in 6 weeks. So I would have to completely stop working on Not That I Could Tell. That it is because I could really, I am also a mom. I have 2 young kids, so I can only really do, you know, I could only do one other big writing project in addition to my full-time job. So I would have to stop work on Almost Missed You, or stop work on Not That I Could Tell, concentrate on Almost Missed You, doing my edit or my my revision or my copy edit or whatever they had sent me. And then I would kind of then I'd turn that in and I'd have to switch gears back and kind of say, okay, you know, where was I with this? So there was a lot of starting and stopping, which makes it difficult for me to say how long that first draft actually took me. The whole thing from signing the contract to turning it in was only a little over a year. So there were kind of periods of going fast and furious at it, and then periods of essentially having to take a break whether I wanted to or not in order to meet my other deadline. So I've never had to work like that before. So it was interesting kind of trying to learn how to train my brain to, you know, start and stop.
Now, when the first book came out, did you do a tour?
Just a little regional tour close to where I live in Ohio. So I did some events in Pennsylvania, where I'm originally from, and then a few festivals and signings around Ohio and Kentucky nearby.
So was it exciting to have your photo done for the photo shoot for the book? How did you like that?
That was nerve-wracking, you know? But yeah, I guess it was exciting. I don't know. Everything about it was fun. I'm glad I don't have to do it again for a while. We'll see how long I can use. How long can I get by with the same photo?
Well, I think it's a great photo. It really captures you. It's a fun photo.
It was a fun shoot. I was lucky to get several that I could use. So there's a really talented photographer friend here in Cincinnati who worked with me on it, named Corey Schaffeld, and he did a great job.
Absolutely. Now, as you heard, we played a book buzz.
That was so nice. Thank you.
Rita Murrow is she's a mystery writer, and she loves to read mysteries, and so she's a good friend here of Joy on Paper, and I love that she does these little book buzzes to tell people about books that they should read, and I play them quite often, not just during my program, but other times too. I play them so that we can encourage people to get out there and buy your book, because I think everyone will really enjoy this book. Not That I Could Tell is it's just one of those suspense books that I think when I was reading this was coffee, because you mentioned it's funny in the beginning of the book you have a scene where the someone wakes up and they say coffee, and I was reading that book about midnight, and I said to myself, coffee. And sounds good to me. And I got coffee and a piece of there's a particular type of cinnamon toast that comes from the Upper Peninsula. It's a very hard piece of dried cinnamon toast, like a biscotti, that you dip into coffee, and it's so delicious. And so there I am reading your book well into like 2 or 2:30 in the morning. And because I, as I said, I fell in love with Izzy. I wanted to know more about her. I was as intrigued with the mystery, but I wanted to know more about Izzy. And so there I'm in the middle of the night. And since I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, that's a dedication, I tell you.
That is dedication. Well, now I'm hungry for cinnamon toast.
Well, you can go on my website, and there is a link there. It's called Trinary Toast. Oh. And it's something special. If you love coffee, this toast is so wonderful. You dip it in, and it's like pure heaven. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Okay, I'm going to have to get some. Okay. I'm working on a revision deadline right now, so I could use some coffee and some snacks.
Okay. Well, let's talk for a minute about the fourth annual Mystery and Thriller Virtual Conference.
Yeah, let's do. So that is this weekend from Writer's Digest. It is April 6th through the 8th, and it's a conference that you can do from home in your pajamas, which is pretty great, right?
Absolutely.
I might even be teaching in my pajamas. Who knows? On Sunday morning, maybe I'll have coffee. Maybe I'll have some cinnamon toast by then. So it's really, they have a great lineup of instructors. Karen Dione, who has a super hot book right now called The Marsh King's Daughter, is teaching. Catherine McKenzie, whose new novel, The Good Liar, is, I think it's out today, actually. Hope Clark, who runs the Fun for Writers, the Funds for Writers newsletter, but also writes low country mysteries set in the South. Lots of great instructors teaching kind of one session each in their online webinars. There's plenty of room for interaction. And my session is on characters, which you mentioned you think I have a slight knack for. So hopefully
you do.
That's true.
You
I'll
do.
Be teaching on characters on Sunday. So. Yeah, so if you're interested in writing suspense and you've always wanted to attend a writing conference but don't have the budget or the room in your schedule to attend one in person, it's a pretty good option. There's information at writersdigest.com. You can still register, I think.
Yes, you can still register, and it's so reasonable. It's just $199. And for all of my listeners out there, if you are writing mystery and suspense, you really should get in on this conference because, as I said, it's all of the Reader's Digest conferences or teleconferences or whatever are always great. And this one, I think, is particularly valuable, one, because Jessica's going to be there, and also see Hope Clark, because she's going to be a guest on the program in 2 weeks. I couldn't get her earlier.
Okay.
So she's going to be a guest, and I love her writing. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity to study the craft of how to make a book interesting, a mystery interesting, and how to add that suspense that you want in a story.
Yep, and all the sessions, you know, they occur live, but you also get a download of every session at the end of the conference too, so you'd be able to go back to these tutorials, or if you think, well, I want to do it this weekend but I have something I have to run and do Saturday afternoon, you know, you get them. You couldn't participate live, but you'd get all the sessions and the audio recording and everything on demand afterwards, so you could really go back to the tutorials again and again. So I do think it's a good value, and how nice that you're having C. Hope Clark on too. I mean, talk about a generous member of the writing community. Her Funds for Writers newsletter is great.
Absolutely.
I've subscribed to that for years, and she does an enormous amount for other writers without, I mean, there's so much information in there, even in the free version, that you don't have to pay for. It's a labor of love on her part, and she's just a great, all-around great champion for fellow writers.
Well, I am glad that they picked you for the character part, because, as I said, when I was rereading Mary Higgins Clark's book, I went back, I was reading some of the earlier ones, and in between ones, I sort of wanted to see how she developed, too, because, you know, it's wonderful, you know, she's 90 years old now.
Oh,
isn't it wonderful that you can keep writing? And
yeah.
The beautiful thing about her newest book is that it's as fresh today as her other books, you know, and it all comes down to this ability to write characters, sometimes not a lot of description, but somehow just capturing them with a few words, that is a great talent and one that every writer needs. But particularly, one of the things in a mystery story, you want a lot of characters because you want a lot of potential, you know, in most cases, potential murderers or potential, you know, bad guys or bad girls. And so you don't want just a few characters in a suspense book. So you want that rich, you know, motherload of characters. And it's,
well, you need to raise the stakes for the characters, and in order to do that, people have to care about what happens to them. Otherwise, there's no suspense. You know, if you don't care about the person that the suspense is happening to, then it's not that suspenseful, right?
Exactly, and that's why, as I said, I sort of honed in on Izzy because I wanted to know. I wanted to know that she was going to be okay. I was following her life along, and I wanted to know that she's going to be okay. So
that makes me so happy, though. I do think, not that I could tell, you know, there are quite a few woven subplots in there with a more of an ensemble cast. So I'm glad to hear that one of them, you know, grabbed you.
Well, I think it's important when you are reading a book that you really invest yourself in the characters. And so that's, you know, it's just, I think it's amazing that after so many years of just working around writers and being around writers that it took you a long time. But I think it came perhaps at the right time, because now you have it all there in the back of your mind, all of those little tidbits. And whether it's I love that colorblind when we're talking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just
like I said, they're not really yellow.
Yeah, I mean, that's just little things like that, which make the book so very, you know, rich in details that, and because they just flow. And I think you're just amazing. I was so thrilled when I found you because of Barbara Poel and, you know, your writing. Although I read Writer's Digest all the time and saw your name until Barbara grabbed you, you know. So it's just really, I think it's very exciting. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I do want to ask, I've been asking because of I've been going to quite a few writers groups lately, and they all ask me a couple of questions. One, have you ever had a disaster where you've lost anything when you're writing, you back up everything?
Oh my gosh, no! I am the most paranoid backup person. I think I had it happen to me at the Writer's Digest office enough, where our servers were notoriously bad. They would go down, and it would eat whatever you were working on. So, I did. I have lost several articles that I've spent hours slaving over, whether editing or writing them. So I have learned my lesson. I back everything up when it comes to my personal writing, like all the time.
That's good, because you really have to. What do you use to write? Microsoft Word?
Just Word. Word. I'm pretty low tech.
Okay. I like Scrivener, because Scrivener saves automatically every few seconds. And so, because I have lost stuff. Oh, boy. And another question I want to ask, was there a particular teacher in your life who really encouraged you to write?
Oh, you know, there was maybe not anyone, but, you know, my mom was a teacher, actually. She was never my teacher in a classroom, but my mom was a sixth grade English teacher.
Ah, so
I think I did grow up with that, a little bit of that love of books from her, certainly.
And speaking of love of books, what was your favorite book as a child?
Oh, my favorite book as a child. As a teenager, I think it would have been anything by Judy Blume. Not just Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, of course, but there is this other novel she had, Just As Long As We're Together, it was called. That was one of my very favorites. As a child, I guess I remember loving The Velveteen Rabbit, but that strikes me as such a sad story. but yeah, I mean, my teenage years, I think, were my most formative years as a reader. I just read everything I could get my hands on. I read Judy Blume. I read Mary Higgins Clark. I read Wuthering Heights, you know, just everything when I was supposed to be sleeping.
Me too. I was Jane Austen obsessed for many, many years during my early teen years, so much so that when I was 21, I went to England and bought a house not far from where she grew up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's
amazing.
That's real obsession. But I want to thank you again for being on the program today, Jessica. And as I said to everyone, I think this is a great book, a wonderful read. It's just always so much fun to talk to a writer who has found that joy in writing, and you certainly have.
I have, and you have it in the title of your show, which I think is wonderful. So thanks again for having me on.
Okay, Jessica. Well, we'll see you and have you back in a year, right?
All right, sounds good.
Okay, and meanwhile, everybody can hear you, perhaps in your pajamas. they won't see you, but they'll be able to hear you at the 4th Annual Mystery and Thriller Virtual Conference. And it's all you have to do is go to Writers Digest or Writers Online Workshops. It's only $199. I mean, for that, that's so little, and you're getting all of this wonderful talent talking to you. So I want to encourage everyone to do that. And again, thank you, Jessica, for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Wow. As I said, this is a wonderful conference. It's too late today is, what's today? Oh, my goodness. If you are an indie writer and you didn't submit your book, that's too bad because they had the Writer's Digest indie contest for indie writers. But it's too late. Yesterday was the deadline. Now, I hope that you will think about doing this workshop for $199. Wow, that's a real bargain. And among the contributors to this are Catherine McKenzie, who's a fantastic writer, Karen Dionne, Jeffrey Wilson, and Adam Sternberg. I'm going to have Adam Sternberg also on the program, I hope. So, really, it's a wonderful opportunity for you to learn the craft of writing mystery and thriller novels from the very, very best people in the business. And on Thursday, I'm going to be talking to Mary Higgins Clark about her newest book, I've Got My Eyes on You. And meanwhile, I want to talk about an author who's, I feel so bad. It's just unbelievable. I was hoping to have on the program today a really wonderful author and somebody whose work I admire so much. And I'm so sorry that somehow, I don't know, I could have messed up. Things have been busy. But I wanted to talk for a few minutes about Betty Lee Crosby. She is absolutely a fantastic author. Her newest book is The Summer of New Beginnings, a Magnolia Grove novel. It's a really great book. And, you know, the wonderful thing about Betty is that she's published as an indie author. She's become a USA Today best-selling author four times over, I think, now. And the newest book is, it's just a very inspiring book. It's about a family that learns to love each other and to overcome problems in their lives. And I particularly like it because it's about an aspiring journalist named Megan Briggs who has, she has to make a decision when her father dies of how she's going to handle the situation and if she's going to just walk away and go and do what she had planned to do, head off to school, or if she's going to stay and help the family. And she makes a decision that changes her life, changes her family's life. And it is just a really warm story. And I hope that people will get it because I am sorry that I did not have a chance to talk to Betty Lee today. Somehow we got all confused with the Central Time Zone and the Eastern Time Zone. And I don't know if we're on, I don't even know if we're on Daylight Savings Time anymore. But Betty is a really wonderful author. One of the first books I read of hers is called The Twelfth Child. And that was a wonderful book, full of humor. And it's set in America's Great Depression time in the Shenandoah Valley. And I really, really enjoy that book. So There are quite a few books. I'm going to put this up on my website, and I hope that people will just go and have a look at her, because Betty is an amazing author. She's written three series, and this new one, Magnolia Grove, is her fourth series. And I think Twelfth Child was the Amazon best-selling cozy for 3 or 4 weeks. It also ranked high up there on the literary fiction and was number seven, I think, on Amazon's historical mystery. So if you like books set in the Great Depression, The Twelfth Child is a great book for you to read. And I'm sorry to her. I apologize. I don't know who did it or how it happened, but somehow I have missed on this interview with her. So I do want to thank of course Jessica Strasser for being on today, because Jessica is now becoming one of my favorite. I love suspense. As she said, she met Mary Higgins Clark when she was a teenager, and that had a lasting impression on her. And Mary Higgins Clark has always been one of my favorite authors. So I hope that you will tune in on Thursdays for the interview with Mary Higgins Clark. And meanwhile, I want to remind everyone that it also, speaking of Irene Goodman, it is also the beginning of the month, and Irene Goodman always offers a critique at an auction at the beginning of the month. You still have time to go in. Go to IreneGoodman.com, and you can click on the critique section, and all the money goes to charity. Irene will do an absolutely fantastic critique of your work. Not only will she talk about the work, but she'll also talk about the marketplace, where she thinks it would fit in, and give you some really great advice on how to have a new perspective on your writing. So that's at IreneGoodman.com. And remember that Barbara Poel is one of her agents, and Barbara Poel is really fantastic. I know she gets a couple hundred query letters, but she does like a really smart and intelligent query letter. So if you have a book out there that you want to promote and to try to get an agent, contact Barbara Poel and go to the Irene Goodman agency.com. And meanwhile, I just want to remind everyone that one of the greatest joys in life is to see your words on paper. That is a real joy. Or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or, if you're really, really lucky, to someday have them spoken on the big screen. So it's up to you. You just have to get out there and write. And meanwhile, make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed, who's in the control room, and he's always so nice to me. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. So, bye-bye for now.